This is the BBC Home Service. Science Survey. Tonight, W.R. Stamp of the Royal Naval Scientific Service speaks about the possibilities and problems of underwater television. Mr. Stamp.
The possibilities of television underwater created a great deal of interest after the search for the wreck of HM Submarine Affray in the summer of 1951. Lying 280 feet below the surface of the English Channel, the Affray was first identified with improvised equipment built at the Admiralty Research Laboratory. Since then, a considerable amount of research has been done, and we now know the possibilities and limitations of this new medium, and in what direction improvement is desirable. As a matter of fact, many of the problems of vision underwater had already been met with in underwater cine photography, and it was this experience that aided us considerably with the first camera. But it soon became apparent that television was raising some unique problems of its own. The first question I find that people want an answer to is, how far can you see? Well, unfortunately, the answer is the same as the one about the length of a piece of string. The muddy waters of estuaries and harbours just cannot be seen through. On the other hand, the clear waters of the Mediterranean, visibility as much as 80 or 90 feet can be obtained. But a range of 15 or 20 feet is more normal in home waters. So there's just no answer to the question, how far? The whole problem of vision underwater is rather like that of seeing through a fog. Indeed, as this is the dominating problem in any application, it's worthwhile going into it a little more fully. Well then, there are three factors that govern visibility. First, the light, both from the object and the light source you're using, is scattered or diffused by the water molecules themselves. Except in the very clearest water, this effect is relatively small. Secondly, the light may be scattered or obstructed by solid particles suspended in the water, either particles like silt or sand, or by the myriads of minute plants and animals floating in the water, collectively known as plankton. In all but the clearest water, this scattering by large particles is the most serious obstacle to vision. Lastly, the light may be simply absorbed without scattering. This only happens to any great extent in waters where there's a natural yellow dye. This dye is probably organic in origin, and is partly responsible for the green colour of some coastal waters. I should explain that the distance one can see through the water doesn't depend in any way on the depth at which one's operating, unless, of course, natural daylight's being used as the sole illuminant. Clear water's just as likely to be found 1,000 feet down as near the surface. Now, because the most serious scattering is from large particles, large, that is, compared with the wavelength of light, no advantage can be expected from using any particular colour or wavelength of light. We've confirmed this by experiment. But a yellowish light may be advantageous in water containing the dye I mentioned just now. Incidentally, these comments apply only to television. In photography or direct vision, there are other factors that may have an effect on the choice of light. There's also a difference between TV and photography in the positioning of the light source relative to the camera. Photographically, very good results were obtained at night by placing the light source close to the object to be photographed. This keeps the water between the object and the camera lens relatively dark and improves visibility, much as you can see a person standing under a street lamp on a foggy night, long before you could have hoped to pick him out with your own headlights. But one of the great advantages of a television system is that it can be used as a self-contained unit without the assistance of divers. So the light must be included as part of the camera structure. And, not to make the whole affair too bulky, it must be comparatively close to the lens. So much depends on the compromise between the desirable and the practical, and on the careful shielding of the unwanted light from the camera. Greater ranges of visibility are obtained if daylight is used instead of artificial light, but this is only possible in moderately clear water at shallow depths. There are two adjustments, similar to those found on all television sets, which can be used to improve visibility underwater. One is the contrast control, which can be used to increase the contrast of the original scene, and so more readily to pick out detail. The other is the brightness or black level control, which can be used to make the misty water appear black, and thus make any slightly brighter object stand out more clearly. This trick, of course, doesn't work with dark objects. I've dealt at some length with the problem of visibility, because one must first understand the difficulties to appreciate the uses to which underwater television will be put. Let's look at some of them now. It's in wreck survey, and during diving operations, and so far we've had the most experience. Used on its own, the television camera can work deeper than a diver, and for longer periods even than an observation chamber. It also involves no risk of life. And as the picture is presented directly to the salvage experts on the surface, they get a much more accurate assessment of the condition of the wreck than they did from the diver's description. This same direct presentation makes the problem of maneuvering salvage grabs, or other devices, relatively simple, because by operating in the field of view of the camera, they can be placed with surprising ease. Seeing this done is a fascinating experience. The sense of intimacy is so great that it's difficult to believe you're looking at something hundreds of feet below the sea surface. This technique can also be used to help the diver by placing his shot, which is a heavy weight fastened to the end of the thick rope down which he descends, in the exact position for the work he has to do, and to be sure he has a safe descent. A deep-sea diver can operate for such a short time at depths of 200 feet or so, and is so restricted in his movements, that this is a very real assistance. For inspecting ship's hulls below waterline without dry docking, and examining harbour works, such as dock gates, the TV position is less promising. The difficulty is, of course, the muddy waters of most harbours. If only a very limited field of view is required, and a correspondingly close approach is feasible, television may be of some use. However, a photographic survey has been made of dock walls in Malta, where the water is comparatively clear. Though it's evident in some circumstances, visual methods can be valuable. But it's the use of underwater television as a research tool that I personally find the most intriguing. Direct visual methods haven't been much used in physical oceanography up to the present. Photography has been used to some extent, but except when under the control of a diver at comparatively shallow depths, this is a necessity blind, and what is photographed is largely a matter of luck. Direct exploration by bathyspheres and similar devices has been used even more rarely. With the aid of TV, some problems might yield directly to simple observation. For instance, the explanation of the false bottom echo, found by echo sounding in many parts of the world, which has so far evaded other methods of investigation. Others may need auxiliary apparatus, such as the examination of water motion within a few inches of the bottom, a difficult matter by remote reading or recording instruments, vastly simpler if the motions of small streamers or patches of dyed water can be observed. This leads me to a generalized use for television, which has found application in other spheres, namely the observation of readings of measuring instruments at a distance from the place where they are being used. Although a television camera channel is admittedly a complicated means of transmitting information, it may often be simpler to use ordinary instruments giving visual indications, such as a pointer moving over a dial, and reading them at a distance by television, than to employ remote reading or recording instruments with their attendant uncertainties. At the Admiralty Research Laboratory, we're building an underwater television system especially for oceanographic investigations, and hope to use it before long in cooperation with the National Institute of Oceanography. Marine biology is another field for exploration, and a camera built specially for this purpose is being developed by the Scottish Marine Biological Association. As a research tool in other fields, TV should prove of the greatest assistance in the design and development of many underwater devices. And now a few words on the underwater television camera itself. So far, and we're now building our fifth underwater casing, we've used cameras similar to those used by the BBC for outside broadcasts. The watertight and pressure-resistant casing to house these cameras, at any rate at moderate depths, presents no really difficult problems, but they do demand sound engineering and common sense. The cable to link the camera with the surface has also proved no great difficulty. Neither, rather to our surprise, has the handling and direction of the camera underwater. But the bulk and shape of these cameras tends to produce an unwieldy casing, if designed for operation at great depths. The camera installed recently in the Navy's deep diving ship HMS Reclaim, to replace the original camera which identified the affray, weighs 1,700 weights in air. This is designed for depths down to 1,000 feet, and includes a large factor of safety in view of the severe bumps and jolts which are inevitable during wreck survey under sea conditions. But in a less well-equipped ship than Reclaim, this very large and heavy equipment might prove difficult to handle. So, we're going on to produce a camera specially for underwater use, which is simpler than the present ones, and we hope, much smaller. The chief optical problem is to provide a wide angle of view, which is required because of the limited visibility and consequent closeness of the camera to its subject. Simply to place the camera lens behind a flat glass watertight window restricts the angle of vision in water considerably because of refraction effects. We've tried to overcome this by using a spherically curved window, the so-called fisheye lens, but although it worked to some extent, we gave it up because of the practical disadvantages. A better method is to have a flat window, which is easy to make, mount, and make watertight, and to use specially designed camera lenses behind it. With these and other modifications, we've increased the angle of view from 25 degrees in our first camera up to nearly 70 degrees. And now, what of the future? I've already mentioned smaller cameras. These will make it much easier to work at greater depths. The existing 405-line standards will provide over a closed circuit, that is, one not involving radio transmission, pictures of as high a definition as is likely to be required for most applications. Indeed, for many, the number of lines might be reduced and the interlacing principle discarded, with some simplification in the circuits used. Underwater television is not alone, however, in its demands for smaller and simpler cameras. There's a whole field of non-broadcast applications now being opened up, rather slowly, it's true, which have similar requirements. Our experience in wreck survey has shown that stereoscopic television would prove a great asset. Colour, too, would improve the ease of interpretation of underwater pictures, but only if artificial light's used. Experience with colour cinematography has shown that pictures taken with natural lighting are so uniformly green or blue in tint that little more information is gathered than with a black and white picture. Present colour television methods are in any case rather insensitive for underwater use. And there I must leave it. I've indicated there are still many problems to be solved, but at the same time, the future is full of fascinating possibilities.